The Gothic Shed.
Hello and welcome to day 17 of the Cosmic Shed Advent Calendar. Let's see who's behind the door.
Hi everyone, it's me, Maddie. And I was thrilled to be able to chat to former NASA storyteller Jessica Fox, who's now working at the Synthetic Biology Institute in Edinburgh. But I'll let her tell you a bit more about what she does herself.
My name is Jessica Fox, and I am an author and a filmmaker. And as a day job, I am a storyteller / nerd whisperer. And what that means is I work with companies and science organizations talking about storytelling, collecting stories, and teaching people about storytelling.
So what is like a typical day for you?
I don't have a typical day, which I know is a bit lame to say, but it's true. And I do like it like that. So a typical week might look like I have a couple of days to finish a script. I'm having some meetings about stuff that's in production. And at the same time, I'm working with places like the Synthetic Biology Lab at Edinburgh University, collecting stories, creating things for them, or consulting for organizations like Expo North that I'm doing currently, or startup companies, and helping them about how to kind of get their narrative out there, or teaching scientists, leading workshops about how they can use narrative in their work and why it's important.
Wow, it sounds incredibly varied. Are you a scientist or a writer?
A writer and such a wannabe scientist. Scientists are my heroes. I studied astronomy very, very badly, I have to be honest. I had a great professor named Dana Backman who'd basically stay after class with me so I could learn all the physics I needed to in order to study cosmology. And I loved that. It did not come naturally, but I really liked being amongst scientists. So I kind of kept that with my work.
And have you always been drawn to synthetic biology, or have you kind of worked for the place? Because I know you worked for NASA too.
Yeah, you know, totally the opposite with synthetic biology, I have to be honest. I was not a natural biology student, which I think disappointed my parents a lot because they hoped I'd be a doctor. I had for a birthday present every year, my mom kept on recycling this one gift where she thought like one year I'd grow into it, which was like a see-through skeleton where you could take the bits apart and see the insides. And it scared the living daylights out of me to the point where I think after a couple of years of trying to like offer the skeleton to me, she just gave up. So I was, I probably would say a perfect candidate to do what the synthetic biology lab needed, which is they really needed an outsider and a layman, which I ticked those boxes very much, who could come in and figure out what the culture of that center is and figure out a public engagement piece to do to get people a little bit more involved with the work that they were doing. So basically, if you could explain it to me, you could explain it to anyone, I promise. If I could understand it, anybody could. So that's what I was doing there. And I was much more, now I'm totally into it. It has changed my point of view about biology and my interest in it, which is the fun thing about kind of getting to be part of a community for a length of time. You get really, really into the work that they're doing. But I was more naturally inclined to be interested in what NASA was doing. I grew up so fascinated by astronomy. So that was almost like an easier draw for me. But I like the more challenging jobs. I think they're more satisfying.
Yeah. So what's been your favorite one to kind of write about, or your favorite sort of
That's hard.
Or one of the ones that you've enjoyed in the last year or so?
I think instead of like a favorite client, I have more favorite moments. And I really like when I work with people, instead of me telling their story, you kind of get to know them for a while and using certain techniques and tools, get them to tell a story. And they wouldn't naturally think of themselves as storytellers. And you can see the effect that has, which is awesome. So getting some scientists to write down their stories and getting them more interested in creative writing, or it has a lasting effect where I've just learned that, you know, one of them is now taking a creative writing course. So I'm super excited about that. And finding the talent there the imaginations of scientists are so extraordinary. And, you know, I remember working while I was at NASA. By day, I'd work for them, and then at night, I'd have these, like, pitch meetings for Hollywood. And technically, Hollywood's supposed to be a place of, like, huge creative muscles flexing all the time. But I really found, actually, while working at the Jet Propulsion Laboratory, there are far more creative minds there. Not only problem solving, but when given a purely creative task, not just a scientific one, they were so up for the challenge, and awesome things came from that. So I guess seeing people transform into storytellers that wouldn't normally play or wouldn't normally use narrative is the most satisfying bit.
Fantastic. And do you think scientists seem to kind of have this preconceived idea that because they've chosen science, which is, you know, generally tends to be like fact, and obviously storytelling is kind of a lot more associated with fiction, do you think they kind of have a preconceived sort of roadblock about trying to do it?
Yeah, I definitely think that's true. The first thing they assume is that stories are not true, science is true. The other thing I think too, which is a problem, is that they've worked so hard to divorce their emotions from their work because of the scientific method, which is a great thing, that when it comes to storytelling, it's all about emotion. Stories are all about emotion and exploring emotions. So then I guess the natural next question is, like, why bother putting the two of them together? But, you know, being able to talk about what you do is really essential for the survival of what you do. And not only that, but science, as you just beautifully explained, is becoming so complex. And actually, you know, you were saying you studied chemistry and engineering, and there's so many mixing disciplines now that I think it is going to exponentially take off in terms of how complicated it is to be able to explain technology to people. It seems more and more like magic to the layman like me. And in order for people to buy into the technology and vote for it and not be afraid of it and think of it as aspirational and positive, people really have to understand it, and shouldn't have just blind faith in the science that's coming out. So being able to explain it is essential. Like, really, really critical, actually. So going back to what you said, I think coaxing scientists to tell stories is getting easier. I think they do see the need. But the two things I'd say to stick up for most scientists is that time is an issue. And, like, fair enough. And not everyone has to be a good communicator. I think everyone's capable of it. But, you know, within a lab, you have a diverse group of personalities. Not everyone has to be able to be a storyteller. You know, poor scientists, we don't want to pour all the hats on them that they're going to have to wear. So I get time is an issue, and some people are more naturally inclined than others, and I think that's okay.
Yeah. And do you think social media helps or hinders people getting more into telling science stories?
Ah, that's a really good question. I mean, social media, if that includes podcasts, not to be biased because we're doing one, but sure. I guess I'm a little bit of a Luddite, which I really shouldn't be given the field that I'm working in, but social media, I'm finding, has become more of a vapid way to communicate really, really quick. Other forms, I guess, of social media, if that includes podcasts or vlogging, become really much more nuanced. But in terms of tweeting, I think tweeting is a great way to get people nerdily into something. So someone just turned me on to, like, hashtag Folklore Thursday. I don't know if you know about this, but they, like, everyone's using that hashtag and giving, like, examples of amazing different aspects of folklore. So social media can grow nerd fans of certain things, but it's more the gestalt, if you know that word, around an issue rather than the facts of what they're talking about. So gestalt is a great Yiddish word. Trying to think about how to define it. It's like the baggage that comes with stuff that you could get really into. So a great gestalt thing that works is Books Are My Bag. Do you know that campaign?
No.
Okay, maybe it is more in Scotland, but there's a great campaign called Books Are My Bag, which is trying to promote independent bookstores and bookstores in general to actually go in and buy books. And they give you this canvas bag, and they have events, and it happens every year. They vote on awesome authors, but they're, like, packaging the gestalt around reading and, like, making people fans of it. Usually gestalt's not, like, a totally positive thing, so I'm kind of, like, misusing the word, but it is, like, the baggage around stuff.
Well, they always say that all publicity is good publicity, right?
I mean, yeah, the social media is a hard thing. I'm probably not the best versed because it's not how I get my science and it's not how I become nerd fans of people.
But I guess it's kind of like a nice sort of introductory sort of step into being a bit more vocal about science and your science that you find interesting.
Totally, exactly. And you know, it's a tool. Tools are usually good, but it also depends on the person using it. I think it, you know, the misuse of tools says a lot more about the user than the tool itself.
So you're living in Scotland now, right?
Yes. I was living in Southwest Scotland, which is a beautiful part of the world. It's called Galway. And I was living in a place called Wigtown, and I've moved to Edinburgh, which I think more people would have heard of, and Edinburgh is a fantastic city.
Yeah, definitely. Especially J.K. Rowling and Harry Potter seems to be quite a hot
totally
spot.
But do you know, for like nerd interests, I'm finding Edinburgh like one of the most nerd friendly cities. So there's something I went to recently called the Bright Club, which is they teach scientists stand up, which is totally genius, and they work with them for a very long time. I could get this wrong. I think they have 4 events throughout the year. So they really are careful with the scientists, and they work on them and work on them. They host it in a comedy club, and these scientists come out and do stand-up, and it's awesome.
That sounds fantastic.
Yeah.
Being funny about science.
It's great. And most of it is laughing with them. Maybe a small percentage is laughing at them, but in general, it's awesome.
No, that sounds like a fantastic community.
Yeah, it's great. There's a lot of stuff like that. I mean, most of it, I don't probably even know. There's Summer Hall hosts a huge amount of, Summer Hall is an old veterinary school that's been turned into like artist studios and things. And they host a lot of events. There's a great science festival on. So there's a lot happening.
And there's been quite a lot of, so yeah, mixing artists with scientists to see what kind of art-inspired things have can be dreamed up. Are you involved with any of those sorts of things?
So there's one project I don't know if I can talk about yet. There's something in the pipeline along those lines that Expo North is looking to do. I'm really big into how science papers can lead to really good Hollywood blockbusters. So science papers are really laborious to read, but if you actually get to the nuts and bolts, there's a lot of stuff that if you translate properly, I think a lot of Hollywood producers would love to option. So I would be happy during the day where there's like a trade magazine where a producer can flip through it and look at like really well-versed couple sentences, tons of science papers to option. Love that.
And that kind of really nicely leads into me asking you if you follow any sci-fi.
I do, but I'm such an old, like I'm an old person. So I like my old sci-fi. So I love Star Trek, The Next Generation, which will date me, but it is my favorite. And I almost had a heart attack going into Urban Outfitters recently and seeing that they're selling Walkmans with like pre-made mixtapes. I couldn't get over it. I could not get over it, but it brought back so many memories of like even Flight of the Navigator. I love Flight of the Navigator. It was such a great classic sci-fi young adult story. So yeah, I think those would probably be two. It also depends on what you classify as sci-fi. It's a hard genre. Like Ghostbusters kind of isn't, but they have scientist heroes.
Mm.
Is Ghostbusters sci-fi? Not really.
Yeah,
they have technology that goes into it, but it's about ghosts. I don't know.
I guess you're probably best placed.
Yeah, I would argue, I would argue, which is going to make tons of people unhappy, but Star Wars is not sci-fi.
No, this is where we stand. Cosmic Shed stands, like, it's fantasy.
Yes, I am with you.
Yeah.
I am so with you in that philosophical shed. I 100% agree.
That's excellent to hear.
Yeah, from a storyteller, yes, that would be my hard line on it.
As a storyteller yourself, do you have any favorite storytellers?
Yes, I do. So there's one that I feel like everybody who's interested in the crossover of science and storytelling should know, and that's a storyteller called Jay O'Callaghan. He's an oral storyteller. So what that means is that he's properly old school about storytelling. And what he will do is he'll create his own stories. He'll also be hired by communities. The communities can be a town like Jonesboro, Tennessee, an institute like the Emily Dickinson Institute. He worked for the Steel Mill Workers Union in the States, and he also worked for NASA, and he spends time within a community and he collects all these stories. And he creates a story that speaks to the heart of the community that he spent time in. And he's not only an extraordinary storyteller, his work's on YouTube, you can get his MP3s or DVDs, you can find a lot about him online, but he also is one of the kindest individuals and has an incredible creative process that he's very generous with. So if you go to one of his workshops, he will teach you pretty like life essential storytelling skills that will never leave you. You really don't have to do anything else but go to one of his workshops and you'll be like set for life. He's a national treasure and he might come to Scotland soon, which is awesome.
Cool.
You will have the opportunity in the UK maybe to meet him. You heard it here first. Exactly. He made so two claims to fame. Mm-hmm. Is one of the administrators who hired him at NASA said it was one of the best things he'd ever done with his career. So like check one. Check two is he made apparently Buzz Aldrin cry during one of his performances, which is very difficult to do. So I think that should be like a gold star on one of his stories.
Most definitely. Yeah. And you yourself have also got a book out recently, right?
Yes, so I do. I have a book out called Three Things You Need to Know About Rockets, which may be a misleading title because it's supposed to be a metaphor. I've had a lot of people write me and be like, I thought this was a book about physics and I bought it and it feels like a rom-com, but thank you anyway. So it's more of a rom-com vibe, but it's based on a true story about me leaving NASA to go to a bookshop by the sea in Scotland. And kind of the adventure that ensued from there. I will add, you know, going back to the sci-fi thing, I will add, because I'm noticing that all the things I mentioned have mostly male heroes in it. And I'm pretty much a fan of any sci-fi that has female scientists or heroes in it. I cried when Doctor Who said, I'm the doctor and she's a lady. It just made me so happy.
Yeah, no, it's very exciting, really, isn't it? You know, we're getting like promoting women in science and being a bit more prolific. And then we've also, yeah, got kind of, was it STEM, which is the science, technology, engineering, mathematics, being rechristened as STEAM, like having
totally, yes.
Like, it's really all starting to become a bit more unified and collaborative and inclusive, which, very positive steps.
It is a positive step. I'd also say I'm fan of the bioepics that look back in time and retell the kind of history that we thought we knew, but maybe tell people's voices who haven't been heard yet. Like The Hidden Figures was awesome. Really, really good. I'd love to see one about Mary Somerville because she was the first person ever to be called a scientist, which I feel like should really be explored a bit.
That should definitely be more of a thing.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many examples of unsung heroes. I think I just saw a picture of a group from Harvard tons of Victorian women who are like crunching numbers for them. And I kind of recently read there's so much to dig into. The Wind Talkers were another. Jay O'Callaghan has a story about an amazing guy at NASA called J.C. High Eagle, who was part of the Native American community in the States. He ended up working for NASA and he helped Apollo 13 get back. So there's a lot of unsung stories that need to be put into the fabric of our science narrative, I think.
So is that something that you'll be looking forward to kind of in the coming years?
Yes, I'm trying to do some films about them. So that's some of the film projects.
How exciting. So we need to look up for some blockbuster movies with your name.
Yeah, I mean, we did a silly one, which I called My Famous Dead Boyfriend, which was a YouTube series about me dating characters from history.
And
it was fun, like Einstein or Buddha. I was in couples therapy with Buddha, who's a terrible person to be in couples therapy with because he's so calm about everything. So just silly stuff like that. There's lots of ways to get people interested.
Finally, have you got any tips for people wanting to start off? Is there like a formula as a scientist we like to follow, kind of set routine, or just kind of go with it?
Yeah, in terms of like having a first foray into storytelling, I think, is not resenting the fact that you have to do it is number one. I think getting rid of the attitude where you're like, why do I have to communicate my work? If you already feel like that, you don't have to. I think that people who already feel naturally inclined should. But I would say everyone is usually a good communicator, and everyone has their own cadence and rhythm about the way they tell a story. And the first thing they can do is actually just talk story, which means just talk to people and tell the same story to different people. Please not the same person, because you do not want to bore them, but over and over again. And what you'll start noticing is when the person's bored listening to you, when they're interested listening to you, and you'll start noticing you'll like lengthen the time of the interesting bits. And over again, you'll start workshopping stories that you can put like in your toolbox for when you're talking to the public, or it's just talking story to people all the time is the first way to do it, or just noticing when you do.
You're just going
to
go out and tell stories about your science like you do things that have happened to you in the day.
If you start talking about what you find interesting and really look at the person's face and start noticing when they're bored and when they're not, and just lean into the parts that they're interested in too, you'll find this happy ground of you're talking about what you want to talk about in a way other people find interesting.
Thank you so, so much. It's been a real treat talking to you.
The Cosmic Shed.
Science fact.
Science fiction.
And everything in between.